This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from Bridge Magazine senior writer Ron French about preparing teachers for the classroom in Michigan. But first, we're joined by State Representative Eric Nesbitt. He represents all of Van Buren County and the northwest section of Kalamazoo County in the Michigan House. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks, Gordon.
And we're also joined today by Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Gordon. Good to be here.
You've been a major supporter of increasing efforts to find natural gas in Michigan. What are your thoughts on the Department of Environmental Quality putting some new regulations on hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking?
Yeah, this is the second time since I've been in office that the DEQ has updated their rules and regulatory structure in the state. And I'm going to be planning on holding a hearing in the near future, probably not in December, it'll probably be beginning of the year in January, that we'll be looking at reviewing the DEQ's proposed regulations. Michigan's a model state in terms of the way we safely, effectively harvest our natural gas and oil. We have some really good regulators at the Department of Environmental Quality here in Michigan, and I think it provides a great chance for us to continue developing our resources here in the state, putting people to work, making landowners some money, and also putting money into the state's coffers that goes to the Natural Resources Trust Fund and the State Parks Fund that helps protect and preserve our outdoor recreational opportunities. And so it's a very unique opportunity here in Michigan. In terms of the regulations specifically, I think you're seeing a department that's proactive in terms of trying to ensure that we have safe land, safe water, and clean air. And looking at the set rules, that this is going to be a multi-month process as they do a review. Some of these rules are upgrading from instructions. For example, there was a requirement that they had to use a water withdrawal assessment tool when they were going into natural gas development. This is moving it from as part of the instructions to part of the rules. And so
making it a requirement as opposed
to just...
Well,
it was a requirement before. It was part of... But this takes it to the next level in terms of the rulemaking process in the department. Another one is which I think is a good idea, is doing pre-sampling of the underground drinking water before they begin drilling operations to make sure that what they're doing and the safety is that we have pre-sampling done of the water to ensure that what they're doing is correct and that the casings don't have any integrity issues. And so I think as we look at these rules, I'm going to be continuing to find that balance between ensuring that we have good rules to protect our environment while also allowing for regulations in the state that allow for investment and development here in our state.
Some Democrats in the legislature have proposed some additional legislation. Among the requirements would be a disclosure of the chemicals are used.
That's already part of the rules in terms of the mineral data sheets that are required by the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. The new rules that the DEQ are issuing and now up it so that they're going to be put on to a national database. It's called FracFocus.com. People can go on there and be able to see, you know, the wells that are registered and see what compounds are being used in that hydraulic well stimulation job. And so this is something that's becoming an industry standard, as it is, and this is going to the rules level at the Department of Environmental Quality.
It's industry standard to disclose the chemicals used?
It's becoming industry standard, but it's already in Michigan that they already have to, you know, give to the Department of Environmental Quality through their mineral, to their data sheets, that what chemicals they're actually using. So the disclosure's continuing to go forward. Now,
is that also disclosed to the public? Is that public
information?
Yeah,
you can go online and take a look at the Department of Environmental Quality's website. Go look at what well job is happening, what drilling job, and they'll be able to see what compounds are being used in that hydraulic frack job. And you got to look at it too, that 90% of its water, 9.5% of its sand, typically, or silica, 90-95% water, 9-9.5% sand, and then you're looking at about 0.5% that are different compounds that are used that usually prevent bacterial growth when you're going down, that prevents rusting of the pipes and trying to make sure in different geological formations that we have the proper compounds to be able to break loose the natural gas that's there. a unique thing here in Kalamazoo, and we're at Western Michigan University, is that we're actually home to the Geological Survey here in the state of Michigan. And if you ever have an opportunity to go over and visit Bill Harrison over at the Geological Center, it's great to actually do a tour and go through and see and have a sit down on the academic side of what we're working with in terms of geological formations and the safety and the efficacy that we can have here in the state for harvesting natural gas and oil.
Alex?
Well, the Detroit News put out an editorial calling for Governor Snyder to veto the bill that would move suits against the state out of the Ingham County Circuit Court. Governor Snyder has said he doesn't, or hasn't shown any indication that he will veto the bill. What are your feelings on some of the calls to veto that and the bill as a whole?
I think you look at it. It's called Court of Claims, and I know a lot of individuals hadn't heard of it unless you've sued the state. You probably don't have too many friends that go around suing the state or having to have a case there. But the Court of Claims is there to file suits against the state, and what it is the first hearing is done in the Ingham County Court System. That's elected by about half of 1% of the population here, or about 2%, 2.5% of the population here in Michigan. And you look at if somebody has a suit or an issue from up in the UP or in further reaches of Michigan, that I think it presents an access challenge in terms of individuals having access to the courts. So the proposal is that there'd be, as part of the Court of Appeals, you'd file the suit through the Court of Appeals process. And so I think it makes sense, instead of having, you know, a small segment of the state population electing these individuals, that you have the opportunity, because of Court of Appeals are elected in larger district areas, and having them serve as having access to the lawsuits that are against the state of Michigan.
The Detroit News editorial says that the problem lawmakers want to address here is legitimate. They just have an objection with the way it's done. The setup will certainly raise charges of cherry picking. The ability of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to handpick judges based on his perception of how they might rule is undeniable. The change also makes appellate judges to serve as trial judges, a responsibility they may not be well suited to handle. That's reading from the Detroit News editorial. What's your response to that?
Well, I think there's a few things. The Supreme Court judges here in Michigan are elected on a statewide basis, so everybody has a say in terms of who is actually serving on the Supreme Court. In terms of working through the judicial system, we have a long history in the United States of being able to put, I guess you could say, the scales of justice, of being able to look at who's going to be reasonably looking at these court cases. And I do believe that as we continue to work through, you know, these issues, that I'm happy to continue to see ways to make this more effective and available for the citizens here in Michigan, because I do think there is a large issue, as they pointed out in that editorial, that there is an issue with it. And so this is an area that was presented, and I feel that it provides better access, that if individuals have issues with the state of Michigan, that my constituents, I think, will have better access to justice.
You have proposed a bill in the State House that targets something known as smurfing. Can you explain to our listeners what is smurfing and what are you trying to do about it?
Yeah, it's not that I didn't like the little blue fellow cartoon characters when I was young, but no. and that's what a lot of us think are smurfs from our childhood years. But smurfing, it's a serious incident. You look at Southwest Michigan, and we have a real problem with a methamphetamine epidemic. You talk to the sheriffs, the law enforcement officials throughout the counties, and especially in Allegan and in Van Buren counties, and we have a real challenge at hand. We've updated some laws over the last 2 years that have included, you know, for example, before you'd have CVS talking to their own computers with CVS. You'd have Myers talking to their own computers in terms of the purchasing of the ingredients used for methamphetamine. In last term, we upgraded that so that it's a common, you know, for those purchasing Sudafed, that law enforcement's able to see, are you purchasing five from CVS the same day as you're purchasing five from Myers, as you're purchasing five from Walmart, so digitizing it to be able to do an enforcement. But what we're also seeing now is that people coming in and going out and hiring individuals that'll purchase small amounts of meth for somebody else to be the cooker, with knowledge, knowing that they're, it's going to be used for methamphetamine manufacturing. And so this is another step in terms of the process of combating the meth epidemic. This is a bipartisan package, a Democrat from the Upper Peninsula who also has an issue. He actually was working on these bills, and I joined in, and hopefully we can have continued work on trying to make sure that we can combat this epidemic here in the state.
In a lot of these interviews, when we've talked with state lawmakers, we've discussed the decriminalization of marijuana, including with the House Speaker Jace Bulger back in August, who indicated that he thought that while he didn't see a day when marijuana was going to be legal in Michigan, the enforcement was going to perhaps maybe not be as great as it's been. And I'm wondering, when we're talking about methamphetamine and many of the serious problems and the constant adjustments that you're making, does it make a case here for setting priorities, and perhaps is something like marijuana not as big a priority or shouldn't be as big a priority when you're trying to figure out how to handle something as complicated as methamphetamine?
Yeah, I mean, meth, it's a killer. I mean, you talk to some of these individuals that have been on it in terms of the health issues, the oral health issues, the body issues, the children involved, the criminal activity. It's an epidemic that's out there. And I think there is something where there's becoming probably a growing realization that there is probably a ranking in terms of the aggressiveness that you enforce different classes of drugs that are out there. You know, Michigan is one of about two dozen states that have medical marijuana laws now, where you're allowed to use marijuana if you get a script for it. You know, that was passed 60-40 about, what was that, about 6 years ago or so?
2008.
Yeah. And so I think there is some of a realization. You see the vote in Colorado to decriminalize it and tax it. And here in Michigan, I think, just last week you saw votes in Lansing, Ferndale, and Jackson, all voter-approved ones. And so this is something where, but the challenge, you go back to the challenge that's still illegal under federal law, even with the script under Michigan law, even if you're using it under Michigan law. And so that presents a unique challenge with the states that how do the federal government do the enforcement. And also, I think there is a realization from not acting on the medical marijuana law before, not having the legislature act on it, that it binds the legislature from being able to really do some reforms or updates as law enforcement or the medical community see areas that need updating. And, for example, we did pass a few amendments on handling it in the last legislative term. And you have to get a large, I think it's about 80% majority to be able to change anything, and because it was a voter initiative. Same thing with our bottle bill. You know, if we do many changes in the legislature, you have to get a super, super majority, a bipartisan majority of individuals to make any changes.
Is the lesson there then that if there is consensus in the state or seems to be, something's polling high, maybe the legislature should act on it themselves rather than let the citizens take the ball and run with it, because then the legislature has more freedom to make changes and amendments as they go?
And there is, as times advance, sometimes you realize that things need updating that you didn't think of before. And so you look at a bill like this, and I'm not a lawyer or an attorney. I don't pretend to be or even play one on TV, but I do believe when I hear folks saying that it wasn't very well worded, there's a lot of loopholes, there's a lot of ambiguity that's in there, and it's very tough to update some of the ambiguity in trying
but
to get...
But they don't have staffs to read this stuff over like you do in the legislature or a House fiscal agency to examine those sort of things. I mean, you know, when you leave it to the citizens, isn't there a bit of a risk that you're taking?
Well, and I think, you know, at the time, well, and I still think today, I think people, you know, it's the general concept that's there. But you did see last year, I think, a point of some sophistication in terms of dealing with ballot initiatives by the citizenry. You know, we had six, five constitutional, one on the emergency manager bill. And each of those constitutional amendments went down in, you know, pretty much flames, you know, trying to take authority from the legislature, you know, on renewable, you know, energy mandates, trying to throw out a lot of the things on the reforms that we made last term. And so I think there is a bit more of a sophistication. Some of the people than some people give them credit for. But I do think it's a challenge in terms of having to spend, you know, you saw each side spending $30, $40 million with the ballot initiatives last year. You didn't see that same kind of spending with the medical marijuana initiative. There was some money behind it, but there wasn't really an anti-force that was there. So I think looking at it, I think there's a realization that if you do take some legislative action, that it may preempt, you know, some outside forces coming in and spending money in the state, and that you'd have better long-term control over it in terms of as things get updated.
Alex?
I haven't heard you speak yet about any plans for 2014. I saw recently South Haven School Board member Annie Brown announced that she will seek candidacy in the 66th District as a Democratic candidate. Have you given any thoughts to if you'll seek a third term?
In Michigan, you have term limits. You can serve up to three terms, but I'm concentrating on fighting for the hardworking taxpayers here in the state. I chair the Energy and Technology Committee. I have a lot of work to continue to make sure that we have more affordable and abundant energy sources here in the state. We're doing my work on tax policy, making sure we have a competitive tax policy, and continuing to work through rules and regulations here in the state to make us more competitive to create jobs. Politics will take care of itself. I'm continuing to concentrate on the issues and working for the citizens of Southwest Michigan.
So you can run for one more term in the House.
Yeah.
Do you plan to do that?
I'll decide next spring, but as of now, you know, I'm looking at, you know, if I feel I can continue to serve the people of Southwest Michigan, I'm going to continue to do that. And so far, I feel that's going to be the direction.
House Speaker Bolger's going to be term limited after this his current term. Your name's been brought up before as a possible candidate for leadership positions going forward. Would that ever be something that you'd consider?
With term limits, you have up to three terms you can serve. You talk to legislators from other states, and they're pretty amazed that, you know, by the second or third term, you're already running for speaker or floor leader or some other leadership position. As I look at next year, I want to be the strongest voice I can for our area. And whether that means a leadership position or continuing on as chair, that's something where I'm going to, you know, again, aggressively decide where those best opportunities are to represent my district in the greater Southwest Michigan to be most effective as possible for the state. As I said, you know, with the previous question, politics take care of themselves, and I'm somebody who I try to concentrate on good public policy and showing leadership in that arena. And I think people either respect that and follow through, or they don't.
State Representative Eric Nesbitt, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Alex and Gordon.
Eric Nesbitt is a Republican who represents all of Van Buren County and Northwest Kalamazoo County in the Michigan House. And also thanks to Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thank you.